versus Markin.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, my name is Corey Parker and I represent the appellants in this matter, and I'm asking for 2 minutes of rebuttal. Your Honors, it's our argument today that the trial court erred in granting summary judgment to the defendant in this case, as there are genuine issues of material fact regarding whether or not the defendant's published online comments against my client and her business constitute defamation per se, or at a minimum, defamation by implication. In the initial reviews made by the respondent, she stated on September 1st, 2015, in an email to the appellant, "I love my remodeled place. Two exclamation marks. You and your team did a fantastic job. All capital letters, bravo, with a smiley face. Thank you so much, exclamation marks and a smiley face." She then wrote another post stating, "Found Integrated's employees to be polite, respectful, professional, and easygoing. She loved the results of her remodel." So this is her true opinion of how she perceived this company. This is the respondent's true opinion.
True opinion of how she perceived the company once she came into possession of knowledge about the sex offender status of one of the employees?
And Your Honor, to answer that question, the problem here is that her statements made it seem, and omitted certain information, that she believed the business.
Well, there's two separate issues. One is the quality of the workmanship that's done on the remodel. The other issue is a personal safety issue from Ms. Martin's perception, and that is, when a business sends somebody into a person's home without any prior relationship between the two entities, that person is a registered sex offender but is allowed to use an assumed name, and the person taking this individual into his or her home doesn't know whom they're introducing into the home. Your client seems to minimize the quality of the offense as a defense, which frankly is offensive given the legislature's requirement that people of that status register. So that isn't viable. And the question then is, could a person reasonably believe that someone ought to disclose this kind of information, or at least not hide it? It has nothing to do with the quality of the workmanship. And that seems to be the gist of the postings.
Understandable, Your Honor, and I certainly wouldn't minimize that offense.
So how is that they did good work relevant to that?
Your Honor, wouldn't minimize that offense at all, but the appellant's employee's credit, you know, several years had passed, over 13 years from this date.
How does that bear on the truthfulness or misleading nature of what Ms. Martin posted?
The reason that bears on this, Your Honor, is because if your average consumer came to the site and looked up her posts and saw online that she said, "If I could give this company a zero rating, I would. I would say that my experience with this company was awful. They were lacking in the areas of customer service," when all the evidence points to the fact in the initial post.
She also said it was reprehensible that a female business owner would knowingly give a convicted sex offender a position where he would be entering people's homes. People know why she's upset with this company. It isn't because the door frame was crooked or the cabinets fell off the wall.
That's true, Your Honor, but in her experience with the appellant's employee, she found him, because that's the person who was at her home, to be polite, respectful, professional, and easygoing.
The best sexual offender groomers would meet that definition. You're really not – how has she misled somebody in a way that would be corrected by saying the workmanship is good?
Your Honor, again, the point here is that that Corey versus Pierce County, by this court, talked about recognized defamation by implication. So are some of her points.
Yeah, well, I'm taking for granted
yes.
that tort exists.
Yeah.
And I'm asking you, if my complaint is somebody snuck a sex offender into my house, why any information about the quality of the workmanship would change that so that it's no longer defamatory?
Because because some of the comments she made, not all, but some of the comments she made did imply that the work wasn't good, did imply that she was running away from the sex.
If I asked you in two sentences to summarize the sting of the defamation, what is it?
The sting of the defamation is that the company was awful. The sting of the defamation is that the company is lacking in the areas of customer service. The sting of the defamation is that nothing happened to me, thank goodness, as if it was a close call. It wasn't. In fact, they were nothing but polite, respectful, professional, and she was perfectly happy with her remodel.
Is your position that if someone's going to comment publicly about this, they got to throw out everything? In other words, what if she had posted, the workmanship was great, but they employed a sex offender? Would that be defamatory?
No. So I agree, Your Honor, that if she was completely forthright about what she was saying, that would be different. But what our argument here is that the facts do not reflect that. Also, because there are facts in dispute, such as whether or not he did use a different name, which they've contested, Caruso versus Local Union states, in all but extreme cases, the jury should determine whether the article was libel per se or defamation. So that's the point here, is that summary judgment was not the right call. Leave it up to a jury. There were disputed facts. There were ways of interpreting this, and that's why we have juries. That's why the judge shouldn't have summarily made the decision. And so that's our main point here, is are there some statements that could be deemed true? Yes. Are there some omissions that could be misleading? Yes. Let's have a jury figure out and get into the weeds of what was his performance, and what did the appellant know about the employee? Did she even know that he was a sex offender?
So the plaintiff's theory here was not that there was any false statement made. It was just they were misleading or by implication. Is that it? Is that the whole?
Cause I would say
I don't see anything reading the briefs. I don't see any allegation of falsity here.
We did argue, defamation per se, that they did meet the definition of falsity, that they did meet the definition
of falsity. How did they?
That a jury could look at this and say that after reading her initial comments, to then say that my experience with this company was awful is false.
But wouldn't that be her opinion, though?
It's omitting facts about why she felt that way. And this company who is...
What case says you have to explain your feelings and emotional basis for your opinion?
I understand that that's not, there is no case that states that, but we maintain that, sorry, Your Honor.
No, I'm listening.
But we maintain that these are facts for a jury to decide, that some of these statements were misleading, and that a consumer that were to go online and look at this would say, this is a horrible company. They must do horrible work. They seem dishonest and corrupt. They're going to steal my money. That's not the case at all. And that falls right into Caruso and Corey versus Pierce County. Thank you, Your Honor.
May it please the court, Corrine Wilson. I am representing Andrea Martin. I'm associated with David Wick. Your Honors, there are three major issues, I think, presented on this appeal. Number one is falsity, and that proves to be an insurmountable obstacle that appellant cannot overcome. The second issue here is the context, which wasn't really addressed or raised by the appellant. And the third is the lack of damages, which was similarly not addressed.
Well, we only need damages for three of the four causes of action, don't we?
I would agree with that, Your Honor, but it nonetheless is essential for those three causes of action. With regard to the falsity, the only thing that I heard appellant raise in oral argument is, well, there's an issue as to whether Mr. Ohl actually represented that he was, in fact, Richard Kennedy. Now, there was a witness named Gary Deo who submitted a declaration for summary judgment, as well as Ms. Martin submitted a declaration for summary judgment indicating that, in fact, they had spoken with Mr. Ohl and that he had indeed represented himself as Mr. Kennedy, Richard Kennedy. Now, interesting.
What was the controverting evidence?
The only response that the appellant had, Your Honor, was that, well, there's an issue as to whether he signed the contract with Ms. Martin, Richard Kim.
Was there any evidence presented to the trial court that Mr. Ohl denied representing that he was Mr. Kennedy in his oral statements?
No, Your Honor. Mr. Ohl never submitted a declaration.
That's why I phrased the question the way I did. There was no evidence challenging that.
Yes, that's correct, Your Honor.
Do you have to prove falsity if it's defamation by implication?
Indeed, yes, Your Honor. And that's the thing that I think is the stumbling block for the plaintiff. They try to get around the falsity and element by both arguing, well, we have defamation per se and we have defamation by implication. Okay, regardless of what we call it in terms of defamation, you still have to prove falsity. So whatever the implication is, and it's a little...
How do you deal then with the statement in Moore versus Grant where they quote Prosser and Keaton and they say that defamation by implication occurs when the defendant juxtaposes a series of facts so as to imply a defamatory connection between them or creates, and this is the critical part, creates a defamatory implication by omitting facts. Three justices sign the lead opinion and three justices sign the dissenting opinion endorsing that statement. So that would appear to be the law in Washington. So can't you have defamation by simply saying some true things but omitting some true things? The example that's given frequently is the Tennessee case where the newspaper article says, wife shoots husband and woman in woman's living room. Implication, there's some sexual hanky-panky going on. Omits the fact that there were a number of other people in the living room when the shooting took place. Critical fact in assessing that. Hasn't Washington recognized that? So if, in fact, the sting in this case is only present because some facts were omitted, cause of action stated?
I agree, Your Honor. Yes, that is, in fact, the case, and I think that's a correct statement of what Washington law is. The problem here is that you still have to prove that the implication itself was false. So here you'd have to prove, first of all,
What is the implication here?
Your Honor, I'm not entirely sure because the appellant has never fully identified it. They seem to suggest that it's some flaw in workmanship, but it's never really laid out for us what the implication is.
Isn't it a pretty high level? The implication is this is a bad company, don't hire it.
And absolutely, Your Honor.
I think that's the implication.
Isn't
the implication refined to this degree? They're a bad company, don't hire them because they send a dangerous person into people's homes without telling them.
That's correct, Your Honor. That is a fair implication from the review that was posted. And it is both true and it is also Ms. Martin's opinion. And so I think that nicely brings us to a critical case that bears on this issue, which is the Life Designs Ranch case. And that is a case that really in this situation requires a high level of analysis and detail. And the importance of that case in particular is that that also involved online content and online opinions being expressed. And there were a couple of observations and findings that the court in the Life Designs Ranch case made that bear on this case as well. One is that if we start to stifle the opinions of disgruntled consumers who want to post these online reviews, we really eat away at their freedom of speech. The second, and I think equally as...
Well, we put a limit. Just because you're disgruntled doesn't give you a license to say whatever you wish.
Absolutely, Your Honor. Yeah, it has to be true. I would agree.
Is there any inference to be drawn from the fact that whatever one of these online commentaries actually took the comments down? Is that something they could have argued to the jury? Obviously, they're problematic because they won't even allow them to be posted.
Well, no, I think everybody's worried about getting sued. I think that's really the fair implication to draw here is that with the – and I think the court probably recognizes as well that this is an area of law that's getting more and more focus and more attention and is developing day by day. And in this particular situation, nobody wants to get sued. They take down the content. Easy problem to solve, right? So they don't have a freedom of speech issue to worry about. All they're worried about is their own personal exposure. In Life Designs Ranch, I think one of the most astute observations the court made is when you're the audience, when you are reading this content, if you're looking in the context of an online review, what you expect to see is the opinions of consumers who have interacted with the company. You don't expect to see a news article. You don't expect to see a dissertation. You don't expect to see an unbiased set of facts. What you expect to see is somebody's opinion on how they've interacted with that company. And that was part of the basis for the finding in Life Designs Ranch that the defendant, in fact, did not commit defamation. And I think it's equally as applicable here, because in this case, it's even more obvious that was what Ms. Martin was posting was a review of her personal experience. Now, in Life Designs Ranch, the defendant actually created his own website to express his opinions. Here, Ms. Martin went to websites such as Yelp, which is strictly for the purpose of submitting online reviews. So you know what you're getting.
Well, he's going to come back and tell us that Ms. Martin didn't really tell the truth about her own experience, because she first said everything was wonderful, plaintiff dismisses this one employee because of some alleged checkbook irregularities, and she helps this person start a new business, and then apparently she's helping him some more because she's now saying something completely at odds with what she had previously said.
And that's absolutely irrelevant to the issues, the legal elements of the claim of defamation. Defamation doesn't ask, well, you know, where was your heart when you were doing it, or why did you do this, or what motivates you, at least not in the context of private individuals here. What matters is, was it true? Was it not true? Did you imply something that was correct?
Does it matter that the reader might have taken a different message away if the reader had known about that relationship between the discharged employee and the reviewer?
Well, if we start going down that path, we can require Ms. Martin to indicate everything, like, I was happy with the craftsmanship. Mr. Ohl or Mr. Kennedy, whatever he calls himself, was pleasant.
Let me give you a hypothetical. I just bought a new Tesla, and I totally trash it online. Meanwhile, I'm selling Tesla stock short, and I don't tell anybody that. Have I failed to make a pertinent disclosure that I should have to avoid defamation by implication?
Well, I think you have bigger problems with the SEC, but...
Well, let's not worry about that. Let's just focus on tort law here.
Well, it depends on whether what you're expressing are opinions and whether what you're saying is in fact true. If you actually have basis to be unhappy with your Tesla purchase, and you list things like, they reported to me that the gas mileage, because it's supposed to be, you know, electric hybrid, is such and such, and it's not. Oh, is it? Okay, I haven't purchased a Tesla, so I don't know. But regardless, if they made certain representations regarding performance and the car didn't meet those expectations, if the sales experience was awful, if they didn't honor your warranty, and those things are all true, then if you sell stock short, obviously you've got an SEC issue, but that's beside the point, because everything you've said is true. You're entitled to say those things. So I think, and that's really the issue that here that the plaintiff cannot get past, because regardless of how they frame their implication, regardless of whether they call this defamation per se, the barrier that they need to cross that they've never been able to cross is they have to show that either what was said or was suggested is untrue. And that's what the plaintiff can't do here, and that's why the trial court was correct in granting summary judgment, and we would ask you to affirm the trial court's order. Thank you.
Thank you.
Your Honors, to briefly rebut those statements, again, what we're determining here is whether or not there are genuine issues of material fact. And clearly with the dispute that we're having and the questions that are being asked, there are two sides to this. There is a dispute, and we're not here.
Which facts are disputed?
Well, for example, with Mr. Kennedy's signature, contrary to what was said by the respondent, there was evidence that was presented from a handwriting expert, it's my understanding, that showed that.
Does that really bring into dispute whether or not Mr. Kennedy, represented himself to be Mr. Kennedy when he made his first call on the House?
That's been disputed.
How was that dispute? I understand the dispute about the signature on the contract, but I have not heard what evidence is in the record that challenges Ms. Martin's statement that when he came and talked to me, he said he was Mr. Kennedy.
Right, and I understand that, Your Honor.
So is there evidence contradicting that?
From what I recall, it's my understanding that there was a handwriting expert and that.
Okay, that's back to the contract.
Yeah.
Is there any evidence that bears on who he told Ms. Martin he was when he walked into her house?
I believe during the oral argument, for what it's worth, that was mentioned, that there was a dispute.
Is there a declaration?
No.
Or anybody challenges that?
There is not. But just to conclude, I think that the Corey versus Pierce County here is strong, and it goes to the fact that there were facts omitted here, and there was at least enough here to where we can't get to summary judgment. The jury should be able to decide. There's a strong emphasis based on Caruso versus Local Union that the jury should determine these issues, and there was a dispute. If there was someone that went to do a service on a place and they did a great job and they're professional, but then someone is to say, well, I didn't realize they went to prison. I didn't realize they were this ethnicity or this was their background. Where do we stop with that? So there has to be a line, and there was. I just want to conclude by saying there was no duty.
Do we have a line when the legislature says you have to register and say who you are and where you live?
Yes, but it's my understanding that he was complying with that, but there's no duty of a business owner to say this person is an offender, and that's something that I think should have been litigated among other issues. And thank you for your time.
Next case.